welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronic supply chain fields. I'm Mike Buto, Editor-in-Chief of PCDNF and Circuits Assembly. Today's podcast is sponsored by PCB West, the leading conference and exhibition for the printed circuit design and manufacturing industry. Join thousands of engineers and designers this September at the Santa Clara, California Convention Center. Visit the website at pcbwest.com for information. My guest today is Zach Dismukes. Zach is manager of sales and service for Bowman Analytics on the West Coast and a specialist in XRF products. He has spent the past decade in XRF and X-ray technology. He also has a master's in chemistry from my alma mater, University of Illinois. Zach, welcome to PCB Chat.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Zach, if we go back a little more than 10 years, the RoHS directive was upon us, and the industry was looking for ways to ensure compliance. XRF was certainly a hot technology then. As the supply chain made the conversion to lead-free, we don't seem to hear so much about it. I still see it used as a quality control tool, however. Can you bring us up to date on what's happened to the technology since then?
Sure, Mike. Well, you're right. Around 10 or 12 years ago, there were certainly a lot of XRFs put out in the field to monitor the RoHS components and compliance. And like you said, since then, you know, we've been steered away from using the leaded components. But XRF as a general metals analysis tool can be applied to basically anything for composition or metal plating thickness measurement. So it still has a lot of uses, and sometimes it's sort of doing dual duty as, hey, my primary function is measuring the metal finishing thickness, but while we're at it, we might as well scan for some of these other restricted components. So it's kind of a general type of an analysis tool that can be applied in a lot of different ways. And technology itself has changed. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But for RoHS, yes, you're right. It's kind of not as hot of a topic now that we've kind of gone away from using the leaded components.
So maybe we want to get into a little detail on what someone who may have sourced an XRF device, you know, back in the mid-2000s, if they were going back into the market today, what would they expect to find?
Well, now I think you're going to find a lot of the equipment has become faster, more efficient. Just the changes in PC technology have really changed the way these pieces of equipment are integrated with the external PC. Even 10, 12 years ago, I mean, Windows wasn't what Windows is today. And the processing power of the PCs was just much slower or lower in processing power. And so now you've got systems that are going to be faster. They're going to have better limits of detection. So whereas something 10, 12 years ago might have taken 5 minutes to get a good scan to make sure something was lead-free, now you can do that same test in 30 seconds or less. So I think speed, control of data, you need to get the measurement, but you need to show your customer or your supplier, whoever you're actually testing for, that your components were within the specification, either be it lead-free or within a plating specification. So now data can be stored automatically, transferred to external processing systems, and so on and so forth, to make reporting of the data much easier as well. So those are a couple of the big changes that I think they would have seen then and now.
Many of the handheld systems that I'm familiar with were single collimator systems, but I believe today you can get multiple versions of that?
You can. So the handhelds are really popular because obviously they're portable, they're small, and you don't have any limitations on the large size of parts, you know, having to put some big part into has to fit into a chamber of, say, a tabletop system. But you're right. The handhelds now, some of them have the smaller collimators to really focus the X-ray beam onto a small component. The challenge with a handheld, though, is you're kind of limited by a couple of things. First of all, they have much lower power capabilities or limitations because of being a handheld. You've got an open beam that can shoot X-rays out in the air, so there's always a safety concern. So the actual power output on those systems is really low. And then when you put a really small collimator to focus the spot size down, you're taking an already low amount of X-rays coming out, and you're really minimizing what actually gets to the sample. So that's one of the just the fundamental limitations of a handheld versus a larger desktop system where you have an enclosed chamber and you can really get a lot of x-rays down to a small feature spot size.
And I know Bowman has a line of several benchtop systems. What's the smallest element size that you can measure today?
Well, it's a great question because that is one of the big changes over the last few years is we now have a way to focus the x-rays off of the tube rather than using a collimator. I mean, there's sort of two ways to focus an x-ray beam onto a sample. You can use a collimator, which is basically a hole, an aperture that forces the x-rays through that hole, but all the x-rays that do not fit, you know, that are around other areas of that hole just get absorbed by the collimator block. So it's a very inefficient way to get a small spot onto a sample. The much more effective way is to use what we call polycapillary optics, and it's essentially an optical fixture that's attached to the exit window of the x-ray tube, and it focuses those x-ray beams down to a very small spot without losing any of the actual power from the tube. So you basically get almost 100% of the x-rays from the tube down to a very small spot, and we can go down to as small as 7.5 microns in spot size now.
Is that a proprietary technology?
Well, there's a couple of manufacturers that make those. It's proprietary in the sense that there not many people are doing it, certainly. But I think, you know, it is these companies are distributing these types of systems to a variety of different analytical tools, you know, not just coating thickness XRF.
Do you find companies looking to use XRF to measure elements that are not covered by RoHS or some of the other environmental directives?
Definitely. I mean, sometimes there will be, depending on the part that's being manufactured, for instance, out here, I just moved to Southern California, you know, fairly recently, and it's sort of a different world out here than in the Midwest. There's a lot of aerospace. There's a lot of military work being done. And anything that's getting, for instance, sent off into space, satellite or something of that nature, it might have different components that are considered contaminants that could be devastating to whatever component that they're measuring. Some element like, I don't know, like rhodium or, you know, something that just happens to react very badly to the conditions that component's going to be placed into could be, you know, of critical importance to make sure it's either present or absent. Definitely. It sort of depends on the application, but I've seen some weird elements come up where people ask to measure, and I just sort of say, we can do it. I don't know why. I guess I don't need to know why, but yes, we can measure for that.
Now, I know a newer use has been to use XRF for testing, for example, to measure coating thickness. What can you tell us about some of those emerging applications?
Sure. No, it's a great question because, I mean, that's kind of one of my real areas of focus is on the thickness testing. We've definitely seen things change. I mean, I've been in this industry, like I said, about a decade, and I've seen things change, you know, even in that short amount of time, going away from things like hot air soldering, leveling to now finishes like Enig and Indipig. And I'm starting to see more finishes come up that I hadn't even heard of 5 years ago, just because the changing technology in making, you know, very high density, very small feature type of print circuit arrays and semiconductor devices. You know, XRF is great because it's totally non-destructive. And with the benchtop systems having the very small spot sizes, you can really focus on one single wire bonding feature or BGA or something like that, where you've got one tiny component that might be critical in the connection of some critical component on the board. And you want to make sure you can focus on that critical area and measure the thickness of each of the metal finishing layers involved. For me, that's kind of the wheelhouse of the Bowman equipment because it's really focusing on measuring the plating thickness of those small features.
Say we're using a certain type of plated lead then soldered to a copper pad. There's going to be some kind of merger of the materials as they are heated and soldered together. Insofar as XRF is concerned, they can still tell the difference.
Right. As long as the actual metals present, the actual elements present are different, then yes, XRF can test for each of the different elements that are present, be them stacked on top of each other, like in a plating type of an application, or when they're, you know, actually melted together, like in a solder, tin lead solder or something of that nature. It brings up a good point that I just want to make sure I'm clear on. When you're setting up an XRF calibration to measure thickness, you do have to assume that those layers are laid out one on top of the next. You know, you kind of have to tell it, hey, this layer is on top of this layer, which is on top of this layer, because we're collecting all of the different element photons that are coming back. And you have to kind of say, okay, these are coming from here and these are coming from on top of there, so that you get the actual readings, you know, accurately, if that makes sense.
If a customer has a custom sized board, how long of a lead time would you need to develop a chamber that would fit that? For example, we see some of these boards that are like surfboards, right? You know, the big telecom boards might be several feet long. When we think about a benchtop system, you don't think about one really that big.
Right.
Is that something that could be adapted, however?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So one of the things that happened several years ago was that a lot of these benchtop machines that were designed for printed circuit measurement, they were designed with a slotted chamber, to where essentially three sides of the chamber have a completely open slot, thin slot, to where it's still, the X-rays aren't able to escape from the chamber. But you can imagine, even if it was this huge 5-foot board, you could still slide it into the chamber, and it could essentially be infinitely long in three directions. That said, you can imagine, I mean, you have to have a structure to the instrument. You could only go as far back as the chamber would allow. So you could kind of get it back to one spot, maybe rotate it 90 degrees, put it back in to get another spot, you know, if you can envision that. So, but no, they have done a good job to kind of allow for the larger panels to fit inside most of these chambers.
Now, as we look at the environmental effects of X-rays, are you familiar with any studies that have been done on those effects on electronic components or materials? Is that something that customers ever ask about?
They do, and I haven't read any specific studies regarding these X-rays and the effect that they have on electronics components. But, you know, back when I got into this industry, I did read some papers on how this particular power, the voltage that we're using of these X-rays, they are completely non-destructive to basically any types of metals. You know, I think if you had something that was non-metallic that wouldn't as efficiently absorb and distribute the X-rays to where they could just sort of move electrons around freely. Because I've been in different industries where people were measuring something like a painting to measure the pigment and try to date it to make sure it was a true Picasso or whatever it really was from that time period. And I know that, you know, they do have to limit the amount of time that those types of materials are exposed to X-rays. And it might be that they're, you know, dealing with a very, very expensive piece and they just want to be on the safe side. But just to give you kind of an extreme example, I think something non-metallic could potentially, you know, be affected by X-rays over a long period of exposure.
If somebody's buying an XRF system today from Bowman, how long can they expect that to be usable?
A lot of times when I'm explaining XRF to someone who isn't familiar with my world, you know, somebody at a cocktail party or something, I'll say, essentially, these things are like automobiles. They have a similar price range. You can get an entry level, or you can get the Cadillac, right? And so the prices are sort of in the similar range, as well as the life and the expected maintenance. If someone was buying a new Bowman product today, I would say it should last you 20 years. And it may last you longer than that, but just like a car, you know, if you're driving a car 20 years later, you're probably going to want the latest and greatest that's come out in that last 20 years. And there are components that you have to replace. There's an X-ray tube that generates the X-rays, kind of like an engine or transmission. You might get 10 years or so out of that, and then it would need to be replaced. And at that point, you can kind of say, well, you know, I've got 10 years into this. What's out there now? Am I still happy with it? And Should I just replace that component or just get a whole new system? So there's a lot of parallels comparing these things to automobiles, I think. But yes, to answer your question, people typically get, somewhere between 15 and 20 years out, and then they want a new computer technology, if nothing else.
Is there much involved in the calibration process? I know that many of the test engineers in our industry are familiar with X-ray machines, and they use those for, inspecting the whole board, although they're not looking at elemental analysis in that respect. But they tend to leave those machines on because once they turn it off, then it's actually kind of more damaging and more wear and tear on the tube, and they have to recalibrate.
Right, right. And those systems are definitely a lot more sensitive to, like you said, things like being turned on or off or changing the voltage, rapidly, things of that nature. We're running at a much, much lower output power than those type of X-ray generators that do the imaging. So it's not quite as critical for ours. Usually if you are turning it off, turning it on, there's a warm-up time. You need to wait maybe 10 minutes before the X-ray tube gets up to temperature, and then you're ready to go. But typically, after that time, it's going to be a very stable system. A lot of our customers just leave it on all the time. From a calibration procedure, what most customers are doing is they are verifying known standards on a regular basis. I like to recommend that everybody tests a couple of their calibration standards daily just to make sure that everything is within their tolerance, usually maybe plus or minus 5% of the labeled value, for instance. And if so, they can kind of give the thumbs up, we're good to go for the day for testing.
Zach, given some of the shift changeovers, multiple operators and such, how do you ensure the readings are good throughout the day?
We've actually been working a lot on minimizing errors, so to speak, and automating certain procedures, certain processes in the system to make sure that the readings are, every reading is good, basically, that the multiple different operators and different sample sizes and things of that nature. One of the critical things with this type of analysis, and when you're measuring a gold coating that might be 2 micro inches or less, you need to make sure that everything is all working in harmony in the system to get that accurate measurement. One of the critical things is the distance of the X-ray from the feature being measured. That always needs to be consistent, just because the X-rays, they dissipate over distance, and they're really sensitive to that. So we've actually got what we call an auto laser focus feature, where essentially it's a one-click feature where the operator clicks autofocus. It has a laser that is calibrated to the exact proper distance, and it moves the X-ray head to where it's the exact distance it needs to be from the top of the sample that you're measuring. So it's that automatic process that works just at the click of a button. There's some other things in place, like we have barcode scanners. If a company is using barcodes on a board to track the board serial number and the different panels that might be on it, you can have it read that barcode. It'll automatically choose the correct program, ENIG, INIPIG, Silver, whatever it may be, and then it will automatically store the lot number, part number, job number, anything associated with the traveler for that particular part, to where it'll store that along with the measurements. So things like that. We have pattern recognition where you teach it what type of feature you want to measure. It learns that, and then it goes and finds everyone and does it automatically to where it's doing a multi-point measurement and recording each one of those readings. So there's a lot that we've done to make sure we minimize errors and ensure that every reading is truly representative of what the finish is.
And are those features standard on every Bowman system?
Those actually are. On some systems, it would be sort of irrelevant. If you don't have the moving stage, then the multi-point, pattern recognition would be a moot point. But yes, those are all included. We just have one software interface that we use on all our systems, which, again, kind of makes it nice because we're not having to shift around for different interfaces for different systems. So yeah, they're all included as standard.
And Zach, where would somebody go for more information?
Well, they could visit our website at www.bowmanxrf.com. From there, you should be able to get just about anything you might need.
Great. My guest today has been Zach Dismukes of Bowman Analytics. I want to thank you, Zach, for joining us on PCB Chat.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike. I really enjoyed it.
And thanks to our sponsor, PCB West, the leading conference and exhibition for the printed circuit design and manufacturing industry. Visit the website at PCBWest.com for information. For PCB Chat, I'm Mike Buto. Have a nice day.